Ladies and gentlemen, in the blue corner, standing at a sleek 5'11", 245 pounds, the tumultuous tempest of technique, Thomas Lilly. And in the red corner, at a curvaceous 5'11", 315 pounds, the jovial juggernaut of judgment, John Cheryl Sheridan. A meeting of the masters of mastication. Turn your attention as they delve deep into all things lifting and more. This is Peak Speak.
So, we're back for another episode of Early Speak.
2 in 2 days. This is like some sort of organizational PR for us.
I know. It's all due to the fact that I'm not walking at the moment.
I've been banned. Thomas has been banned from walking.
For
he's too athletic. We've just got to slow him down a little bit.
Deloading it until Sunday, and then we can try again.
Excellent.
And then I see the podiatrist soon.
Excellent. I hear doing lots of toe exercises is probably the solution to your problems.
Yes. Well, I'll give that a go. I've also invested in a pair of toe shoes.
Oh, really?
A glove for my feet.
I can't wait to see you in Vibrams.
I'm definitely never going to do that, or I'd kick my own ass.
I'm gonna wait until you're sleeping one day, and I'm going to buy a pair of Vibrams, and I'm just going to slip them onto you. Because they go on so easy.
I can walk around them, and you can wear your dainty little rock climbing shoes that like make you pirouette like a bad
dancer. And are mega fucking uncomfortable.
They look uncomfortable.
Yeah, dude, they are.
So for those who haven't seen these rock climbing shoes, they're like... permanently, it's like a Chinese bound foot.
U shape. It's referred to as a downturn. I put a post on Instagram a few weeks ago talking about functional footwear and
the idea, like a croissant.
Yeah, basically. They have their purpose, and they are not meant to be comfortable. They're not shoes designed for walking. They're shoes designed for fucking climbing rocks and fake rocks. And yeah, they're great, but they're really incredibly unpleasant.
Are they bent like that to kind of allow you to not have to bend your foot like that and tie your feet out?
The idea is that you're trying to put all of the pressure like through the big toe.
Okay.
Because generally you'll be on like small edges where you're just putting pressure on your toes.
Uh-huh.
And the downturn helps you like hook into things a little bit.
Okay.
So a really aggressively downturned shoe, so a really bent shoe, is very good on really steep stuff.
Yep.
Where like if you're on a positive incline, which is referred to as a slab, so it's like past zero, sort of, you know, that way you're leaning forward and you can stand on your feet. You can get away with a flatter shoe. But on a incline, you need the sort of hook shape to allow you to put pressure through your toe and to hook into something like that.
Yeah, otherwise gravity just pulls you down and you slip off.
Yeah, basically. And it allows you to sort of keep tension through your hands and your legs and stuff like that. Because when you cut, it's referred to as cutting loose, like your feet come away from the wall and you're on a big overhang like that, it's much harder to regain.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, as I said, I put a post on Instagram a week or two ago about it. You can have a look at them. They're really unpleasant, but they're very effective. I climbed at the National Library yesterday. There's a big bluestone wall that is popular with boulderers around Canberra. I went and climbed there.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I've climbed there before and been really, really shit. Like just not being able to hold on to anything. Not being able to get any good footing, but in the new shoes yesterday, it made a real difference.
So
apart from getting a little bit sunburnt, I was pretty stoked with that.
Yeah. You're looking shredded as well. In the photo that you posted of you on the wall, you're looking lean.
That's 100% an illusion, which I'm okay with.
That's all right.
That's why I got into equip lifting. I'm okay with the illusion of things.
So yesterday we put up a question and answer box to get some suggestions for podcast content.
We did.
And we got some good ones, but most of them ended up just being like questions. So we figured we're time limited this morning, so we're just going to bang out a Q&A.
Yeah.
Where do you want to start? I got one that says, hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm adequate.
Adequate, good. I like that. I got one that's how to hold on to muscle while dieting, higher volume or intensity. You're probably better slated to answer this question because you're more of a nutrition expert than I am. But my sort of gut instinct goes to a bit more volume. But it kind of depends on why you're dieting, I guess.
Yeah, I would actually say that from a training perspective, higher volume or intensity is going to be, both of them are going to be good for holding on muscle.
Yeah.
Obviously, when you're in calorie deficit, you're not going to be building muscle. In order to maintain muscle, in fact, in the last episode, we kind of mentioned this 83 rule. So 80% for 3 sets a week per body part is probably going to be enough to maintain what you've got.
Yeah.
The reason I would lean more towards higher volume is because if you're going higher intensity in a calorie deficit, you're probably going to be disappointed with how not strong you feel.
Yeah, and it's probably going to be just generally a bit shit.
Yeah, so building fatigue while you're not, you know, you don't have a lot of energy in your system because you're in a calorie deficit is probably going to feel a little bit better with higher volume rather than high intensity. So that'd be...
It also, I guess, lends itself to more sort of less long drawn out rest periods and stuff like that that can probably aid in the dieting process, I would imagine. I know that, you know, if I've done a heavy set of 5, I'm going to need longer to rest than if I've done a moderately heavy set of 8 to 10. That plays a role.
Yes and no. You know, the actual calories that we burn doing this kind of training, regardless of volume intensity, is pretty similar because the intensity kind of fits in where the volume doesn't.
Yeah, fair enough.
The fact that it is a pretty low calorie intensive thing compared to cardio or conditioning or endurance-based stuff. If it ticks the box psychologically, why not?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, sweet. Okay.
What do you got?
Let's see. I've got one in Hebrew that I can't read.
Send it to Ophir.
Ophir's asked the question. So he said, approaches that are against your coaching philosophy but still work.
I would argue that everything works with the right attitude. I don't like the question. Not because I think it's particularly inflammatory, but I just don't think it... I think it pigeonholes us too much. I like to consider myself relatively, especially the more mature I've got as a coach. Oh, that is my phone ringing in my ears. Stupid iPhone. As I get older, I am more and more open to new ideas and other ways of thinking. Mm-hmm. And my first reaction is never, hey, that's dumb. But my first reaction is more, okay, well, maybe my first reaction is, hey, that's dumb.
Depending on how dumb it is.
Yeah, because sometimes it is just dumb. But then I like to try and question my own biases around like, okay, well, how could that work? Like, how could you execute that in a way that would work?
Yep.
You know, like watching Fuzzy go through this at the moment with his West Side approach to things. I think that's a really interesting example of this, that that's something that I know in the past Fuzzy would have said was dumb, but he's looked into it enough. He's thought about it. He's now got it, applied it in a way that works for him. And I think that's the thing about this. I try not to say like, oh, well, that's dumb. It'll never work, because I think there's a way to make almost anything work if you understand the principles of training well enough. I think you can manipulate any method to make it work well. Maybe not as well as another method could, but I think there's value in everything. Even if the value is like, hey, I'm just not going to do that because I don't enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the reason you don't like that question is the exact reason I actually really love that question. And I think now that you've given your answer, hopefully you can like that question too, because it allows us to demonstrate the complexity of training. I think training is often reduced to program plus maybe a little bit technique and then maybe some recovery and nutrition sprinkled on top. And it's like each of those individual factors has so much nuance and so much complexity. And to assume that there's like that we can box ourselves into a philosophy,
yeah,
that is just fixed and static is too reductionist, in my opinion. And yeah, it's you know, Ophir knows me that I'm very open-minded, and he's been coaching with me for a little while now and has seen my coaching change and evolve even over the course of the last 12 months.
Yeah.
I think that's what we have to continue to do is like at any given point in time, any coach is doing the absolute very best to give their clients the best result that they can with the knowledge that they have.
Yeah.
So and it's
That assumption that like, I think a lot of people look at things and go, oh, well, that coach is an idiot because they don't know any better. Like, well, that's not always their fault. And you've got to, I at least, assume the best in people until they prove otherwise. And so my assumption is always that maybe you're not coaching in a way that I would coach, but maybe you're not in the same position I am in terms of knowledge and experience and things like that. So who am I to judge you for the methods you're using without knowing the context that you're providing those methods in?
Yeah.
Because 5 years ago, if I look back on my coaching, it's a little bit embarrassing. Because it is so shit compared to where I am now. But I think that's true of any skill. If you're not looking back several years in the past and looking at how you performed then versus how you perform now, and you're not improving, there's no sort of measurable improvement or change in that process, then maybe you're a little too stagnant and you need to focus on looking at other areas and how you can improve on things and, you know, question your own bias and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah, cool. It's probably not that I don't like the question. It's, I think you probably summarized it better than I do. But yeah, I reject the premise that is we have to box ourselves into one particular viewpoint.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What I was going to finish off with was like, you know, for example, I don't use RPE for the main lifts in my programming. I've started incorporating it into the accessory work, but I don't use it for the main lifts. But then you look at, you know, reactive training systems.
Yeah,
they do it with a huge amount of success.
Yeah, heaps and heaps of success. So across like all levels of competition.
Yeah, so even though that's not part of my philosophy, that's been extremely successful for those particular people because they've made it part of their philosophy.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and that's what I mean by like anything can work with the right frame of mind, you know? Like
absolutely.
If you understand the principles enough, you can take any method or fancy idea and probably make it work in some way, shape or form.
Yeah. All right.
A rough outline of a general program for powerlifting, beginner to advanced. You should probably do some squats. You should probably do some bench press. And at some point, you should probably also deadlift. In between, you should probably rest a bit. And ideally, the weight should get heavier over time.
That's a pretty good rough outline. I mean, questions like that are always hard to answer because they're wanting something quite simple. And it's like, this is like when people contact me for online coaching and they go, you know, if you had to sort of define your programming style, what would you say? Like high intensity, high volume, like how would you put it? It's like, well, my programming style is going to depend on your experience level, where you are at any point in time, how close in proximity you are to a comp, like what are your goals with your training, what's your overall strength, what's your current training looking like. There's so many factors that are going to influence what kind of what style of programming that I throw you on at that given point in time. And it's the same thing. Like, what's the general outline from beginner to advanced? It's like, well, are you in a hypertrophy phase? Are you doing strength? Do you need technique work? Are you peaking? It's really quite hard to just box it in.
Yeah, I don't think beyond what I said, I don't think you can give a general program because it is so nuanced depending on all of those factors. And there are... So I don't know about you, but like I don't do... like I don't sell programs. Like I don't do a like, hey, can I buy a 12-week program? Because I don't think I can provide any value that you can't get for less money somewhere else. You know, like if you just want a program to follow, go fucking find 531 or something like that. That's relatively simple. It's easy to follow. And if you're at least moderately intelligent, it's pretty hard to fuck up. The value I provide is in coaching, which is more than just writing numbers and sets and reps on a piece of paper. And I think that in an industry that's flooded with $20 ebooks and free programs and discount sales. I think providing value in a long-term relationship is better than one-off transactions where you go away, implement a program that is a generic program that I've given you because you asked me to give you a 12-week program, and then you go away and fuck it up and then blame me for the results. Well, then that reflects poorly on me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I do sell programming only because I would rather someone run one of my blocks than Larry Wheel's ebook that's probably going to give them no value whatsoever. Sorry, Larry, if you're listening to this, which I really doubt he is.
Fuck, that would be funny. Just get tagged in an Instagram post from Larry Wheels, like, these cunts don't know what they're on about.
No, that'd be really funny. You know what I'm saying? I'd rather give a more valuable program out, but my programs aren't like a 12-week block. It's a very short block where you're supposed to check in the deload and then tell me that you're ready for the next block and you buy the next block and so on and so forth.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. And I think that for me, if I was going to do it, it would be something like that. It would be like, you can do it 6 weeks at a time. This is where the check-in is. This is the process. And it's not just a one-off transaction and then you walk away. Like, the idea is it's an ongoing thing.
It's it always freaks me out when someone messages me and they're like, oh, I'm just recycling that program that you gave me 3 years ago. I'm like, you what, mate? I don't think it's a very good idea.
That was a terrible accent. Please never do that again.
I turned British for a second.
Yeah, I get that, but please just don't.
Where do you see the powerlifting industry as a whole going over the next 2 to 5 years?
Hopefully up. Look, I think there's a lot of really exciting things happening.
Are you talking about squat depth?
Yes. I would prefer it if we never actually took the bar out of the rack and we just got under it and pushed really hard. We just have an isometric competition. That would be fun. Look, I think there's a lot of really cool things happening in the industry. I choose to focus on the cool stuff that's happening in the industry more than I do the ongoing bullshit, because I don't think whinging about how fucked the fitness industry is actually gets anyone anywhere. I think things like your coach development program and stuff like that, that is bridging the gap between like a university level education that doesn't actually provide you with any practical coaching experience or guidance, and a 6 week PT course that costs you $6,000 and then 2 years later you're not actually a PT. I think having things like that come up to bridge those gaps is really cool. I think the level of powerlifting competition is continuing to improve. Watching strongman get bigger and bigger is also very cool. Fuck, like watching Drew Spriggs put on a crazy strongman comp at the Brisbane show while also building all of the fucking equipment for the competition is really cool. I think there's a lot of really, really cool stuff happening. I hope it's going to continue to happen. I'm certainly planning for it to continue to happen because I'm not in a rush to find another career. I think there's a lot of really good stuff happening. I think we'll probably see, we probably already are seeing the start, like the downturn from the peak, where I think people like you and I who run reasonably legitimate businesses will survive, while people who are doing this as a hobby or as a bit of a passion project will start to fall away. Mm-hmm. Because it's fucking hard. And if you're not really committed to it, doing it for a long time is going to be really unpleasant for you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're already seeing that.
And, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very much with you. I hope that the quality of the education, the quality of the information that we have in this world continues to get better. I think there's a lot of cool things happening, especially in Australia, with more and more money coming into the sport. That's,
yep.
You know, if it's funneled in the right way, and if it's distributed in the right way, and if it's used in the right way, it can really turn the sport into something else. Like I'm getting right behind John Gabriel, APL, and Oz Strength, and the vision that he has. You know, he's putting a lot of money and time into young people in the sport. He's got this junior development squad, so he's sponsoring 10 lifters across the year, paying for their coaching, paying for their travel to seminars and workshops, and paying for their entries into competitions and travel to competitions and all
which
that
is
sort of
really
stuff.
Fucking cool, man.
Well, it's unheard of, right?
And it's unheard of even in like legit professional sports. You know, like I know a bunch of guys that played juniors, like junior Wallaby rugby and all of that sort of stuff, and they didn't get the level of commitment to ongoing personal development through seminars and education and stuff. They just got training camps and stuff like that that is not quite the same, I think. So yeah, I think it's really fucking cool, man.
Yeah, so initiatives like that, the continued growth of things like Pro Roar and Big Dogs is great. The local competition quality getting better and more money coming into that scene, more and more comps are giving away prize money. And I don't think prize money is the draw card so much as it is more a reward now for, or an incentive. For,
yeah, a representation of the work you've done and the level of competition.
Which I think is really, really cool. So I think we're heading in the right direction. And I think if we keep this momentum and if we keep our heads screwed on and work together as a powerlifting community, that'll continue to get better.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm excited, man. I think there's a lot of really cool stuff happening. None of it comes from @balkanfarm.shop, who sent me a response to this question that just said, "Hi, Just Shero, please check our website." And I suspect they're selling bulk pharmaceuticals. So if anyone needs some probably scammy bulk pharmaceuticals, that's where I'd go.
Can you message that to me later, please?
Sure. I got a couple of different ones on nutrition and some stuff around that, but I think as we discussed, we will hold off on a nutrition discussion to make it a full episode, because I think we can hit on a few more of those points.
Imagine that. Imagine doing a fucking 4-year degree and being in a shitload of debt for it, to use that skill to do a free podcast. That's where I'm at in my life right now.
Yeah, I listened to Sam Harris's podcast. Sam Harris is like a left-leaning intellectual. He is like an American guy, has this theory like free will doesn't exist. He's part of what's referred to as the what's it called, like the intellectual dark web. It's like runs in the same circles as like Jordan Peterson and some of those sort of dudes, and is a really very intelligent guy. He's also deeply into meditation, has like a meditation app and stuff. Mm-hmm. But he has a really successful podcast that he's actually turning into a subscription only model, because he has had for a long time people supporting him through Patreon, but mm-hmm. he only ever gets like single digit listener percentage that actually convert to paying customers.
Yeah.
So he's now transferring his podcast, and he talks about like this expectation that everyone's content should be free on the internet, and he doesn't necessarily agree with that. So now what he's doing is taking his like sort of 2 to 3 hour episodes and putting the first half unedited as a free podcast, and then if you want to listen to the whole conversation, you've got to subscribe to his thing, which I think is a really interesting model. Maybe we're not at that point yet, but
that was a really long way of coming to the point.
Yeah, I know. I had to provide
my
context.
My friend listens to I'm not sure what podcast it is, but they charge, I think it's $1 per episode or $1 to sign up or something like that. And collectively, like if we charged $1 per episode, we'd be quite wealthy.
In that we'd have $5 or $6.
Yeah, well, I mean, split that between two, it's $2.50 each. That's like 2 cheeseburgers.
Shit, yeah. And a soft served for dessert.
Fuck. A soft serve's only 50 cents.
I don't know. I don't buy soft serves on a caramel sundae, man.
In New Zealand, they were 50 cents as a kid, and they ended up going up to like $1. And it was like a nightmare.
Yeah, $1's a lot of money to spend on mostly air. Okay, cold air, but mostly cold air. I feel like I did that one, so it's your turn.
No, you didn't ask a question. That's you just a good said point. The nutrition thing and said we can do another episode, then went on a rant about fucking charging for podcasts.
These are all valid observations. My girlfriend would like us to have a debate moderated by an impartial third party about the Thomas Lilly porn mustache Shannon Knoll crossover versus the John Sheridan full woodsman approach to facial hair. We probably don't have time for that in this episode. We also don't have an impartial third party here, but
I'm normally not such a gracious loser, but you win hands down. That one's easy.
Yeah, well, I have put a lot of time into being incredibly lazy about growing a beard. It definitely was motivated by laziness. What else do I have? Post-comp, how to transition... post-comp, 4 to 8 weeks, how to transition back to more volume.
Mostly tears.
Yeah, I was going to say as rapidly as possible. Just go straight to German volume training at week 2 and hope for the best. But in all seriousness, I think... Like, again, this is a nuanced question that we can summarize into it kind of depends. It depends on what's next. Like, if you've got another comp in 12 weeks because you're turning it around really quickly to go from states, states to nationals or something like that, then it's going to look a lot different to you've just finished your last comp for the year and you've got 8 months before your next one. So, I think there's a lot of nuance to a question like that.
Yeah. Assuming that if you're transitioning back to volume training, that there isn't something coming up, my general approach with people would be go into a pretty non-specific conditioning phase for 3 to 4 weeks, which kind of looks like if you're basing it off percentages like 50%, starting at 50%, very, very light, high reps, very non-specific, you know, variations of the movements, or not using squat, bench, deadlift at all and changing it to like, you know, goblet squats for time rather than sets and reps. Just basically conditioning the muscles to get ready for the volume that's to come.
And that's exactly the same way I do it. I am fortunate to probably have a bit more variation in like the equipment I have access to. Like, we've got sandbags and some other stuff like that that make some of those movements where you can do a squat, but it's very different to doing it with a barbell and things like that. I really like carries at that point as well, like farmers and overhead carries and sandbag carries and all those kind of carrying heavy shit. I think they're a really great work capacity builder. And I do the same thing, like do them for time. Like, say, okay, you got 15 minutes to do as many as you can, and you can rest as you need to. I recently put a bunch of my people through making them do a kilometer of sandbag carries.
Yeah, I saw photos and stuff of that. It looked horrible.
It was not pleasant. I did it twice, like in 2 consecutive weeks. The first week I did it with like a 40 kilo sandbag and it was pretty cruisy.
How long is the run that you, like, how long is the strip of?
So we have like 20-ish meters. Like, you could probably do it as 25 if you wanted to.
But to do 50 yeah, runs.
It's a bit boring.
Yeah, I was going to say.
If you wanted to walk somewhere, you'd have to walk up a pretty substantial hill that is our driveway. Yeah, and I'm just unwilling to do that. Like, I'm unwilling to do that fucking without a sandbag in my hands. I really like the general stuff. Also, like, A, from a muscle conditioning standpoint, but B, from a mental freshness standpoint. I think multi-year powerlifting careers can get very stale, and having those phases where, and I've had this discussion with a few people recently where they're like, I don't actually like training like this in the same way. It's not as enjoyable as the other stuff. And I've urged them to continue with it with the knowledge that it's only ever for 3 or 4 weeks at a time. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we extend it out to 6 weeks at most. And it's not meant to be like the meat and potatoes of your training. It's meant to just give you a bit of a break from the monotony of squatting, benching and deadlifting, and then build that work capacity up and set you up for the work that's to come.
All right, there's a whole bunch of ones. We probably only have time for one last question. There's a whole bunch of ones that people have asked that we've actually already spoken about before. So things like cardio and powerlifting, we've got an episode of cardio. There's a knee wrap selection question, we've got a episode on equipment where we cover that. Stuff around programming, we've covered that in a programming episode. We can come back to this stuff one day, but for the time being, scroll through, listen to all of them, you'll find it. I thought we might finish on this one. Does being pretty help with online coaching? No, just kidding. Biggest influences.
How would you be able to answer that question?
Yeah.
Do you have any lived experience of that?
No, I was going to ask you. Biggest influences as a coach?
I reckon we could do a whole episode on that.
We definitely could, if you had to summarize.
And we should at some point. A lot of it is in the coaches that I've had in my life. One of them, and probably the biggest influence that sometimes I forget about, but I maybe underplay the significance of, is Aaron Booth, who is my high school footy coach. He's the reason I own a gym and I'm sitting here having this discussion. He's the guy that I went and saw when I was making a transition from playing under 20s rugby to grade, and we trained together for like 3 and 4 months over summer. I lost a bunch of weight, got really fit, played first grade footy, sort of found the love for it through that. So he's been a really significant influence on my life as a coach for sure. I think guys like Chad Wesley-Smith and Mike Israetel and that whole juggernaut group who and the Renaissance Periodization guys who've done such an excellent job of providing like principles and relatively easy to understand information. Then there's a lot of people. Chad's definitely up there with that. I think having people like you in my life also help influence that. Often, not always because we agree, but because you ask questions that maybe I didn't think about. I don't know. I'd have to do a bit more thinking about that to like narrow it down to real influences. I'd probably say the Juggernaut guys have had the most significant influence on my overall approach because they not only provided a framework for the principles and stuff in a really easy to understand way, but in doing so made me think a bit more critically about what I was doing and why.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is more important than just like taking someone's philosophy and calling it your own.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, I think this will be actually a really great episode for us to talk
about the influences. I'd really like to do a whole... Juggernaut guys actually did one of these recently, and it was a really good episode.
Yeah, we'll go really deep into how they've actually influenced us.
Yeah.
I would say it's I've had different influences on different areas over different periods of time, so... One of the big standout ones to me is just like you, the Juggernaut guys really got me thinking more from a science perspective than a meathead perspective. That really changed the direction of how I was approaching things, really influenced the change in my programming 4 or 5 years ago as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big shift for me. I think from a technical standpoint, I don't believe anyone's self-made. I think everyone's had help along the way, but I think with the technique stuff that I've picked up on most of that myself. However, since I started paying more attention to John Shallows and listening to him and talking to him, I got some mentoring off him when I was in the States a couple of years ago, or last year or whenever it was. He's really opened my influenced the way that I think about stability and how I've incorporated stability training and how I've changed that. I always had some, but it wasn't on the right track and I couldn't figure out why some things didn't work. And the way that he speaks and rationalizes it all has really influenced how I approach that.
And he's just a good dude to talk to.
Yeah, he's fucking awesome.
Which also helps. It's the same with Chad. And you'll probably find a common theme across all of these people is that they're all just generally good humans.
Yeah. So another one that might surprise you and might surprise lots of people.
Nothing surprises me about you anymore, Thomas.
I've been watching this guy for a very, very long time, and I'm sure a lot of people that are listening to have as well, but maybe me a little bit longer because I've been around a little bit longer. But Sebastian Oreb, like the way he's transformed his business, the way he's made a name for himself in this industry is actually pretty inspirational. And I really enjoy talking to the guy outside of, you know, his Instagram persona, and he's come to my gym a few times. I've been to his gym a few times and enjoy catching up with him at competitions and talking to him online from time to time. And his approach is quirky and it's worked for him, and I like that. And then finally, just the people that I get to converse with and have challenged my beliefs or solidify my beliefs or ask questions, like yourself. And the two other big names that come to mind are Will Crozier and Matt Stentz.
Oh, I'm dying.
He's getting real emotional. It's okay, Thomas. Breathe. Wipe the tears away. You'll be fine.
My mouth ran out of
lubrication.
That makes it sound way dirtier than it was.
I choked on air.
You're a highly functional human, Thomas. Well done.
Will Crozier and Matt Stenzel as well. Those guys ask really good questions and open up really good discussion. That's about all we have time for. Plus, I'm about to die. I really need water.
Thomas is literally about to die on the podcast. That'd make for a good episode. We'd get a lot of downloads out of that.
Yeah, well, I'm willing to take one.
Live, Thomas dies on air.
That's the kind of guy I am.
Just sacrificing it for the team. I like that. All right. There's word on the street that there might be some Peak Speak merchandise in 2020. Stay tuned. If you're interested, let us know.
Buy some for sure.
Sweet. Goodbye.
All right.
Tell your friends.
Talk to you next time.
Give us reviews, etc.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, God. I need water so bad.